Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, Randy Fine, and today we're going to be talking about healing from loss and grief and how to change our lives, what the loss actually does. When we lose someone, everything changes. The experience is a milestone that can bring everything to a standstill for a time. To move forward, we need the tools that help guide us ahead and lend support through our ups and downs. Whether or not we can free ourselves from the weight of grief, or even just muster the energy to take care of things often depends on our capacity to find the resources we need. Today's special guest, psychologist, grief expert, and widow, Sherry Cormier, explains why no one should expect a grieving person to get over it and move on. Well, that's one phrase that we do not like, do we? She offers the 8 most effective tools for healing, and she knows firsthand that they work. And today we're going to be talking about her book, Sweet Sorrow, Finding Enduring Wholeness After Loss and Grief. Well, good morning, Sherry. Welcome.
Oh, Randy, thank you so much. I'm delighted to be talking with you and all of your listeners today. I'm so pleased to be here.
Oh, good. Well, we're so pleased to have you. The best way to start, I guess, is just to tell, you know, what propelled you into this grief that made you or encouraged you to write it out, write about it.
Yes. Okay. Well, about a decade ago, I was just going along my merry little life, like many of us do, and I got stopped in my tracks because all of a sudden I was hit with multiple losses, and of course losses can be of many kinds. You know, we can lose a person, we can lose a house, we can lose a job, we can lose a dream. In my case, I was losing people constantly, one after another. So about 10 years ago, my father died. That wasn't unexpected because he was older. But 3 months after he died, my beloved husband, who had always been in great health, was diagnosed with stage 4 terminal cancer. He died 3 months after my dad. That was devastating to me. We were relatively young. I thought we were young anyway. Mm-hmm. I didn't know any other widows my age. I hardly knew any single people to begin with. Several years after that, my mother died. 2 years after that, the dog that I had rescued to sort of give me some companionship after these losses, she died. And then 2 years ago, my only sibling died. So I've learned so much about grief and loss. And Randy, it's been really humbling because as a psychologist and a bereavement trauma specialist, I thought I knew a lot about loss. But believe me, when it hits you and it punches you right in the gut, it's a whole different experience when it happens to you than when you are working with somebody else and you're in a more objective position. So I decided to write Sweet Sorrow because I really wanted to give readers and give people out there suffering a book that provides information, but more than that, really provides hope and comfort and inspiration. I do believe that loss is potentially transformative. And I don't think, even though we don't ever get over grief, we don't ever totally move on from loss, we do heal, and we heal in different ways. We often become somewhat of a different person than we were. So there are opportunities we have in loss. And I wanted to write a book that was hopeful and that was not a dark book that made readers feel worse.
And I think you've really accomplished that. It's a beautiful book, very well written, as I told you before we went on air. There's so many things I want to discuss, but in your preface, you quote Pema Chodron. And from the book When Things Fall Apart, and I want to ask you about this, and I'm going to say, this is the quote, "Sooner or later, we're going to have an experience we can't control. The essence of life is that it's challenging just to be fully alive, fully human, and completely awake is to be continually thrown out of the nest." Now, explain that. I think I get it, but I want you to explain it from your interpretation.
Okay. Well, I think what she's saying is that, and I've heard her talk actually a lot about this concept. This is the concept of impermanence, which is things are constantly changing, but we don't recognize that. I think we, meaning universally people, you know, we look outside the window. I'm looking outside my window and I see the same scene that I see outside my window. I see a tree, a lovely Japanese maple tree, and I see some seagulls and ospreys circling overhead, and I see trees. I see this every day. But what we don't realize is that, you know, there's constant, things are constantly changing, including our own bodies. You know, I think the cells in our bodies turn over completely within a span of several years. Trees are constantly changing. You know, they're plants, they're going through this metamorphosis. A butterfly, if you think about what happens to a caterpillar when it turns into a butterfly. So there's this illusion, I think we're under the illusion that things are always going to be the same. I was certainly under the illusion that, you know, my husband and I had this mantra when we were married that we would grow old together and we would just die at the same time. Well, of course, that didn't happen. So I think what Pema Chodron is saying is that, you know, the thing about being thrown out of the nest that's useful, even though it's painful, is that if things were always really the same, we would always be doing the same thing over and over and over in our lives with the same people, and we would never stretch ourselves in any way. So I think she's saying that, you know, in a way, having challenges in life is actually a gift. And, you know, the poet Mary Oliver died recently. She has this great line from a poem called The Uses of Sorrow. She says, someone I once loved gave me a box full of darkness, and it took me years to understand that this too was a gift. And I think that's exactly what Pema Chodron is saying, is that even though we sort of don't want to be thrown out of the nest, it's instinctive to probably really want to stay in our comfort zones, but we don't ever grow that much by staying in our comfort zones. We grow by opening the box of darkness, by confronting things that are hard for us, by being thrown out of the nest. That's how we grow and we stretch and how we learn.
Wow, beautifully said, Sherry. That's
Thank
wonderful.
You.
And, you know, this happens when crises happen in life, even
yes.
that are not grief, when all of a sudden we lose a job that we were so secure in and that we put our hearts and souls into.
Yes.
Yes.
And there is grief to that, because we've gotten attached to that job, and it's sad to lose it.
It's very sad to lose it, and it's scary. And we wonder why,
very.
What did we do? But usually... and I often say it's like being the baby bird being pushed out of the nest, because there's something else there when that
yes.
happens. Not to say
yes.
that we choose these negative things to happen, but
no,
when they
we do not choose them.
Right.
We don't choose them, and we don't want them. I
right.
agree.
We don't want them. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You were, your husband, after he passed, connected with you several times.
Yes, many times.
What was that like? Okay, what was that like?
That's been amazing, especially in the first few years. Actually, Randy, I found in doing research for Sweet Sorrow that about one out of two grief survivors who loses a person, as I did in my case, who's very close to them, gets messages from the person after they transition. They may get messages in different ways. I got messages, and many of us do, in the form of visitation dreams, where Jay just would like come. He would awaken me in the middle of the night. It seemed like it would be around 3 a.m. And his face would be right in front of me. And one of the things I was always struck by is, even though he died of stage 4 cancer and he had lost a lot of weight and, you know, it actually had aged a lot in those last couple months from his illness and his treatment, in the dreams, he always looked the way that he did before he got sick. He was healthy and vibrant and young and handsome, and he was a good-looking dude, let me tell you. And so he would come, and 2 weeks, you know, one of the first dreams I ever got from him, which was one of the most reassuring dreams, was not too long after he had transitioned. I said to him, he appeared, and I said, "Honey, what's it like to die?" Very concise response. He said, "Just wait. It's genius." And that completely, I mean, there were a lot of things about his dying, including the way that he died, that really did eradicate my own fear of death. You know, I realized that death is really nothing to be afraid of. I think we're afraid of it because we don't know exactly what it involves. But it's sort of like being born. You know, it's the other side of the coin to being born. And, you know, watching him die, and he died very peacefully, and I was there, and our two best friends, and we helped him transition, and then these dreams that I would get, and he always indicated to me in the dreams that he was so happy, and he was so free. That was the one theme that I got in all of these visitations from him. He felt very free, and he particularly felt free of things that as human beings embodied in a physical body that we get all tied up in knots over, Randy. Like he felt free of, you know, challenging thoughts and difficult feelings like shame and worried about pleasing people and, you know, worried that he'd made a mistake and let somebody down and all of those things he felt free of. And so I now no longer, I mean, not that I'm ready to transition tomorrow because, you know, I have a lot of life yet to live on earth. But it did really take the sting out of it for me.
I have absolutely no fear because I have done so much reading and had so many guests on that talk about the truth of it. And it is, I welcome it when it's time. I do.
Yes.
I think it'll be awesome.
I feel like you. And I've read a lot of descriptions with people, and you probably have had them on your show, who've gone through an NDE, a near-death experience.
Yes.
And they just talk about this, but then they come back. But they've gone to this place full of light and love and laughter and joy and just, you know, peace. And then they come back. But they had this incredible experience. And it, I think it provides tremendous hope. And I'm like you. I think when it's my time, rather than resisting or fighting, I will be able to say, this is now my time. I had a time to be born, and now this is my time to transition out of my physical body.
Right. And I love that you use the word transition. I used to be a hospice volunteer, and that's what we used to say. And I think your husband was in hospice at some point, right?
Yes. Well, he was in an inpatient hospice in the hospital the last month of his life. Yes.
Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I love that word transition. I just think it's so much better than saying they died, because really they are not dead, in my opinion.
Yes. Me too. And I've stopped. I mean, I do say to people, not to be afraid. You know, I have a whole chapter in Sweet Sorrow. How do you work with people who are going through a big loss? How do you respond to a friend or family member who's mourning a loss or is bereaved? And I say, you know, don't be afraid to use words or have conversations. Like you, though, I now speak of people transitioning rather than dying, because I think there's this misconception that when we leave the physical body, that we exist no more. And I just don't believe that's the case. There's a pretty new book that's just come out recently by Mark Gober, G-O-B-E-R, called An End to Upside Down Thinking. Mm-hmm. And he chronicles
I either
all
had
of
him
these.
On my show or I'm going to.
Well,
yeah,
it's so weird because you won't believe how many shows I'm on, and he's either been on right before me or right after me. It's really bizarre. I don't know him. I've never met him. I obviously have read his book, and I, you know, really value it. But he goes through all of these things where he chronicles very meticulously what happens to the body, and then what happens to consciousness after someone leaves the physical body. And so I also now, like you, Randy, say, when the person transitions.
Right. So I want to talk about the manifestations of the soul. And you say that Dich Nyat Hanh acknowledged that suffering occurs with deep loss, but also that there is really no birth, no death, just manifestation followed by the cessation of manifestation in order to have another manifestation. That's an amazing comment. But let's break that down. What do you think he's saying?
Well, I think what he's saying is just what we were talking about, but he's using different language. And he's saying that the soul is something that never dies, that there's or call it the soul or spirit or consciousness. I think he uses the word soul, though, but that there's this, there's an enduring quality. And so there can be manifestations, you know, some people believe that you might come back for, in embodied form for another life. And yet, and some people don't, but yet he's saying the soul endures, and that there are, he talked about in the in his book when his mother died, that he was so bereft for about a year, and then he realized, sort of like I was saying with my husband Jay, he realized there were all of these manifestations around him of his mother's soul or his mother's spirit that he was seeing. And she kept like coming back to him and giving him different messages and all the all these sort of manifestations of birds and things in nature and things that he and his mother had held so dear in their life together. So I think he's just really using language to say what I said. For me, it was dreams that I would get these messages from Jay in dreams, and I still do. I mean, he'll wake me up in the night, and there'll be just like little messages. I wrote down New Year's Day this year. He gave me two messages in the middle of the night, January 1. The first one is, sometimes when people choose a soul, S-O-U-L, not S-O-L-E, a soul path, what they are really choosing is a course correction. Interesting. Still mulling that one over. What you most object to in someone else is often only a reflection of what is disowned in you. So I get all these little tidbits from him now and then.
Such wisdom. It's, oh, how beautiful. What a gift. Such a beautiful gift of love. So I want to talk a little bit about, well, actually I want to talk a lot, because your book is really about healing. And
yes,
we've talked about the experience. Now, you talk about, and you have a chapter called Starting Over and Post-Traumatic Growth. And
yes.
So what is post-traumatic growth?
And I love talking about this. And this is really the concept that I mentioned earlier when I was saying, you know, that, that Pema Chodron was saying, if we don't ever fall out of the nest, and if there's, you know, things never change, we never stretch ourselves. And so post-traumatic growth is a concept that's been researched by two psychologists named Tedeschi and Calhoun. Richard Tedeschi and John Calhoun. And they looked at different groups of people, Randy. They looked at survivors of severe injuries who had become disabled. They looked at people like myself who had lost beloved spouses. They also looked at veterans, who had PTSD from multiple deployments. In fact, they looked at a number of veterans who'd been a prisoner of war. And they found this phenomenon among all of these various groups of people that had been thrown out of the nest, so to speak, in a pretty catastrophic way. And everyone was saying, well, like you mentioned earlier in our broadcast, Randy, we wouldn't have chosen this experience. We didn't want to have an injury and become disabled. We didn't want to be a prisoner of war. We didn't want to lose our spouse. And yet, having had this happen to us, and it, we're talking about a pretty seismic event, not just a little, not just something that's upsetting, but something that's really sort of seismic. Having had this seismic event happen to us, even though we would not have chosen it, that in some way it's changed us, that we are in some way fundamentally not the same person that we were before. We can't be, because we've gone through this experience that that in some way has changed us. So we're not the same person that we used to be. And that this experience, they call it post-traumatic growth, meaning it's growth that evolves from or following a trauma. And I do want to say timing is everything. So we're not talking about something that results in early bereavement or soon after someone gets released from a prison or soon after they have a disability from an injury. But once someone finds their equilibrium, later in the process, there seems to be this phenomenon that, again, doesn't happen with everyone, but maybe 50% of the people or so find that they are really different in their they're different in some positive ways. They mentioned that when we have post-traumatic growth, and I believe I am someone who has lived through this, and I've gone through PTG, we witness or we find a new appreciation for life. We find or discover new possibilities for ourselves. We feel like we have increased resilience and personal strength. We have improved or stronger relationships or social networks. And finally, we have a stronger spiritual connection and a greater sense of spirituality in life. And those five things are things that Tedeschi and Calhoun found really universal among survivors who develop post-traumatic growth.
You know, I could really see that. You know, and as someone who's had trauma in my life, I can see I am not the person I was before that, and in much better ways.
So, yes.
Yes, and in that chapter, you talk about forming new assumptions. What do you mean by that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think in forming new assumptions, it simply means that you are open to the idea of maybe a change in how you see the world. Some people call that a worldview. You know, there's a story that I like to tell about the horse and a family that owned a horse, and they had one son, and the horse ran away, and the neighbors were all lamenting how awful it was the horse ran away. But then the horse came back and came back with a foal, and the neighbors were all like, oh, this is wonderful. But then the son tried to ride the foal, and he fell and became paralyzed. And the neighbors were all back saying, you know, oh, this is horrible and this is awful. And yes, but then 2 years later, the country went to war, and all able-bodied men were recruited to go to war. But since he had ridden the foal and had the accident and was paralyzed from the waist down, he was not recruited to go to war. So I love that story because I think it's illustrative of how we perceive things, what our assumptions are often, you know, so indicative of how our life goes, you know, what we think, what we assume about things, how we see things, how we perceive things. So forming new assumptions is we're open to a different way of looking at the world and of looking at life. Like, just like what we talked about earlier, you and I now think about death as a transition. That's a new assumption.
Got it. Got it.
Thank you.
And you say, in the same chapter, you say, we heal, but we don't get over grief. Whenever we endure a significant loss, we carry the grief of it for the remainder of our days, even though our relationship to the loss itself will change. So
yes.
How does the relationship to the loss change? And I guess it would be different for everyone.
Right. I think, you know, probably one of the most difficult or offensive things you could say to someone struggling with grief or bereavement would be, you know, don't worry, you'll get over this. Don't, you know, and the thing is, that's really not the goal of grief counseling or even of resolution of grief. The goal of healing from grief is not to get rid of grief. It's to integrate grief and integrate the loss and the meaning of the loss into our lives and the memory of what we've lost and look at the transformative value of it. Just in the example you gave earlier, Randy, about the person who lost that beloved job, you know, they will carry the memory of that because maybe that was their first favorite job or that was a job that really meant something to them. They will carry the memory of that job in their heart, just like I always carry the memory of all these people I've lost in my heart. So we don't want to forget. We don't want to get rid of the good functions of grief. It's not like we move on, yet we do move forward.
Okay.
If that makes any sense.
It totally does. It totally does. In your chapter, Letting Go and Facing Loss, you talk about stress and self-care. And I found this really interesting, and I think I brought this up. While there are many effects of chronic stress, one has to do with the experience of cellular deterioration and telomeres. Telomeres are protective casings at the end of the DNA strand. So we're talking about the effect, physical effect, not emotional, psychological, physical effect that this stress can have on us, right?
Yeah, I think that stress, and now we all need a little bit of stress. I don't want to put a complete negative spin on stress because the relationship with stress is sort of a curvilinear one in that we don't want to be faced with chronic daily stress that's at a high level on one end. On the other end, we don't want to not ever have any stress because we'd be either totally bored out of our minds or almost comatose. So, you know, if you think about that normal bell-shaped curve, you know, we need like a little bit of stress, like up in the middle. We need some sort of positive stress to kind of propel us to getting up in the morning and finding a purpose and making sure that our life has meaning. And in living, you know, there's going to be a certain amount of a little stress. But people that are faced with, oh, you know, like commuting is a huge daily stress, and I live in a commuter's nightmare, as you well know from this area. Caregiving can be a horrific chronic daily stress, although, again, it's very interesting because what feels stressful to one person doesn't feel stressful to another. And it sort of goes back to that horse story that a lot of stress has to do with our perceptions, whether we perceive something as stressful or not. But, you know, certainly if we're stuck in traffic and we're witnessing accidents or we're in multiple deployments and, you know, we're watching people being killed or we've been in a talk with someone yesterday who had a relative who was a victim in the Las Vegas shooting. Where I live, we had 5 of our newspaper journalists gunned down here in June. All of those kinds of things, those are pretty stressful events. And we can recover from stress, but there seems to be something about chronic repetitive stress that really wears down the body, and it causes deterioration of the cells. And so that's one thing that can really impact illness. And of course, as we age, our cells tend to deteriorate too, and those little telomeres at the end of the cells, which grow shorter with stress, also grow shorter with age, but by and large. So that's where they're saying stress can have so many physical effects, physiological effects, as well as, you know, emotional, behavioral, but it really can do damage to our bodies.
It definitely does. And, you know, even with, you know, if you're under, you know, I always tell my counseling clients, you know, when they're under stress and they're like, well, you know, I'll just stay another year and try to deal with it, you know, and I always explain, you could develop a terrible illness from all this stress from staying, you know, and then who's going to take care of you? Not your abuser. And then you're going to be stuck. So, yeah, I mean, the stress is a terrible thing, and people do get ill from allowing them. So what is the message with this, with how do grievers take care of themselves to avoid that from happening, keep that from happening?
Well, I think grievers, when we go through a hard loss, whether, again, it's like we lose a job or we lose a house to a natural disaster or we lose a beloved person or we lose a dream, you know, it's very important, especially in the early stages of bereavement, it's very, very important to practice self-care. I think it's not even a luxury, it's a mandate. Self-care just meaning things that we do where, you know, once in a while we make ourselves a priority, not the rest of the world. So sleep is huge. Getting enough sleep is huge. And that seems to be tied to eating nutritious food and getting enough physical activity, whether it's yoga or dance or cardio or, you know, Zumba or, you know, whatever it is that you like to do. But those, that triad really goes together. You know, the way that you eat, the way that you move your body impacts your sleep. And then I think some kind of spiritual practice is so important for self-care and managing stress. You know, there's so much research now on meditation and mindfulness. And, you know, people who are daily meditators, their stress level is very low despite what they may have been exposed to, because, you know, they are practicing this calming practice that really mitigates. When we get stressed, our bodies get flooded with stress hormones, and this, there's something about meditation and prayer and contemplative practices that really, really can cut through and diminish the impact of being flooded by those stress hormones.
Yes, so true. It does. It sort of, you know, I used to be a meditator, and now, you know, I keep saying to myself, I really need to get back to that. But when I do, I notice that it takes my stress level down to zero. It resets me for the day. It's really cool. So what do we say to people who say the wrong things to us? How do we handle that?
Well, that's a great question, Randy. you know, I mean, I think we have to try to be generous of spirit and heart and realize, I think most people have good intentions, but first of all, I think we live in the United States in a really grief-phobic society. And I think many of us, and I'll include myself, honestly, before I had all of these losses, we feel awkward around grieving people because it brings up uncomfortable emotions in us, and we really do not know what to say to somebody. And I think we feel too responsible. We put too much pressure on ourselves to try to fix somebody who's sad. So I think if we just sort of took that pressure off and just said, we just want to reach out and be with them. But if someone says something offensive to you, you know, I don't know if there's a universal response. Often I will smile gently and then say something like sometimes if someone says to me, well, you know, boy, I know you'll move on from this, I might smile and then I'll say, well, I'm not sure we're meant to move on. I do think I'll move forward.
Wow. Wow, I love that. I think that's a great way to say it. Beautiful. Oh, this has been such a great discussion. So to my listeners, to everyone that's listening, we're talking today with Dr. Sherry Cormier about her book, Sweet Sorrow, Finding Enduring Wholeness After Loss and Grief. Very, very good book. I recommend it. Sherry, how do we contact you and how do we get your book?
Great. Oh, great questions. Well, Sweet Sorrow is available online booksellers like Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. It may well be at your local bookstore. And I have a website. It's www.sherry, S-H-E-R-R-Y, Cormier, C-O-R-M-I-E-R, author, A-U-T-H-O-R.com. SherryCormierAuthor.com is my website. And I also have a Facebook page, at Sweet Sorrow. I'm on Twitter, at Sweet Sorrow. I'm on Instagram and LinkedIn.
Okay. So you're very accessible.
Very accessible.
And you are a psychologist in Annapolis. Do you do remote counseling or just...
I don't. I'm actually licensed in the state of West Virginia rather than Maryland.
Oh, okay.
And so I had a private practice in Morgantown. I'm not doing any private work here. All my work that I do here is either, at this point, is research, writing, consulting, training, speaking, volunteer work.
Okay. All right. Good. Thank you for clarifying
that. There are plenty of great grief counselors in our area. So I've been fortunate to live in an area where I can refer people to some really phenomenal people who are in private practice here.
That's important.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you so much for such a wonderful show. I am so in awe of how you have handled these traumatic issues in your life and the beautiful way in which you present that. So thank you, Sherry. It's been a pleasure.
Randy, thank you so much. I was just, my heart feels expanded from having been with you for the last 45 minutes and your listeners, and I wish all of you peace and comfort on your journey ahead.
Thank you so much. Okay. Take care.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye.
So we are out of time for today, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show, you can email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. And today and always, may joy and serenity be yours. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed today's programming. To learn more about Randy Fine, read her articles, or to make a counseling appointment with her, please visit randygfine.com. That's RANDIGFINE.com. Or visit her on Facebook at Randy G. Fine. Bye.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.